It's part of our Leap of Faith series, which you heard Matt talk about. We've been looking at the lives of a number of what they call the heroes of faith. Heroes of faith, this list of these heroes are found in a book called Hebrews, which is a book written to people who were following Jesus after his life and death and resurrection. And it actually chronicles the lives of a number of people who lived in what's called the Old Testament, the first half of the Bible. And this whole story is about leading up to a particular moment that we're going to look at. And this morning we finish that story, the story of the heroes of faith. And we finish by looking at the life of Jesus. No surprise, and not coincidentally, it coincides with Easter. So that's what we're going to talk about. And one of the things that really struck me as we were looking and thinking about this was the whole issue of a hero. And so we're going to talk about what does it look like and what does it mean to have a hero of the story. And before we do that, I just want to invite you to pray with me. I'm going to pray that God would use this time for each of us to have our own experience of God speaking to us or touching us or caring for us in a very personal way. So let me pray for us. Jesus, thank you for your goodness. Thank you for your faithfulness. Thank you that today we get to celebrate and rejoice. Thank you that we get to rejoice because you are alive. I ask that you would reveal yourself in a unique way to each of us here, that today would be a good day and a day of experiencing you and your presence in our midst. I thank you, Jesus, and I pray this in your name. Amen. Well, I wonder how many of you actually, I don't know, think about the issue of heroes. This whole topic has been really on my mind recently. And I realized that TNT, if you know the TV station, they were very kind to me. They decided to create a series just to provide a visual aid for my sermon this morning. And so I'd like to show you this clip that sort of gets at least what Hollywood's conception of a hero actually is. Let's run it.
Something big is coming to TNT. The Hero, an epic new competition series with Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
I couldn't fit all that on one t-shirt.
This summer,
only on TNT.
Now, the reason that I particularly like that video clip is because I thought I was the only one who took my t-shirts off that way. So I was amazed to find out I'm not the only one. I go through quite a few that way, but now, I wonder how many of you had the idea while watching this clip that actually, many of you recognize who that was. His name is Dwayne Johnson, a.k.a. The Rock, a person who grew in world wrestling fame, became a mega movie star, and is now on this show. And I wonder, by a show of hands, how many of you wondered when you saw that clip that this was about where The Rock was going to be the hero? Okay, but some of you? Some of you only are not halfway sure. But in actuality, believe it or not, this is yet another reality TV show that The Rock is going to host. And this is the description of this show. It pits 10 housemates against each other in missions that will test their brains, their brawn, and even their morality. Now, this TV show maybe will be an epic fail, right? We probably had enough reality shows to last us till the end of time. But the idea captures some of what we see and think about a hero. That a hero requires, and in their language, brains, brawn, and morality. And what's interesting is that most of our conceptions of being a hero involve at least those three, maybe not all three at once, and also involve some other ideas that are important to us in a hero. I randomly sent out an email to a bunch of folks in the church and asked them, what comes to mind for you when you think of a hero? And they wrote things like courage and sacrifice, overcomes obstacles, inspires others, focuses on helping others, little regard for personal safety, acts without knowing how it will turn out, a sense of purpose and focus, not concerned with what others think of them. It's interesting, you can see this list adds some real nuance and texture to the idea of what a hero is. That it, beyond the popular concept of a hero having brains and brawn and morality, that there's deeper things that we're looking for in a hero. I bet right now you even have someone in mind. Maybe there's somebody either personally or generally you think of as a hero. I know when I began to think about or talk about this sermon, somebody popped immediately to mind. And that person was Chesley Sullenberger, also known as Sully. Now, some of you are familiar with that name, probably maybe because you heard what happened to him in his life, and maybe because he lives in Danville, California, right across the bay. But if you don't know that name, he was a guy who landed his U.S. Airways fully loaded commercial jet in the Hudson River right outside of New York. When his engines were failed, both engines simultaneously, because they crossed the path of a flock of Canadian geese. He had virtually no time to make a decision and quickly made the decision that rather than trying to find some airport that he would have to glide to, he landed it in the river. Everyone survived. It's an amazing story. And a few things really stuck out to me about Sully. First, I love that when the plane lands, What Sully does is he gets out of his seat immediately, goes into the plane, starts helping people out of the plane, and he's actually the last one out when all is said and done. He serves all the other people in the plane. Second, that so many lives were impacted by his ability to be cool under enormous pressure that's almost impossible to imagine. And third, and lastly, that while he is remembered for this moment in time, this moment of heroism, what he realizes, even for himself, is that he was prepared and equipped for that moment. From his days in the Air Force Academy to being an Air Force a flight instructor to being a role as a crash investigator, he even was involved in the studies of the psychology of how to help a flight team operate under incredible duress. He had participated and led all these things before his experience. When he was interviewed afterwards, this is the perspective he had on what happened in that moment. He said, "One way of looking at this might be that for 42 years, I've been making small, regular deposits in this bank of experience, education, and training. And on January 15th, the balance was sufficient so that I could make a very large withdrawal." Man, that's a big withdrawal. I believe this may be the great underlying truth behind any of our concepts of what a hero really is. And that is that what they've experienced, what they have given themselves to, how they've chosen to live their lives, that those things have shaped them for that moment when they act in a heroic fashion. That it is not a random act. It is not something that just happens, but actually it has been prepared through the ways that they have given themselves, trained, equipped, morally, spiritually, physically, ethically, that all of these ways prepare them for that moment. That would mean that when someone performs a heroic act, it is not just strictly like, wow, how could they do that? It has actually been a product of all the things that have shaped them up to that point. Now, this is certainly true of Chesley Sullenberger, which I'm sure why he goes by Sully. But it was also true for other heroes of our time who, even more than just moments of heroism, were actually acted heroically over long periods of time and multiple moments of heroism. I think of people like Martin Luther King or Mahatma Gandhi or Mother Teresa. And I personally would put Jesus at the top of that list. Now, I do that for many reasons, but I'd like to highlight a few from the passage that Molly read a little earlier. In the 11th chapter of this book of Hebrews, what happens is that this long list of heroes is given. But we know that it's all leading somewhere. It's all headed somewhere. And we know that because at the beginning of chapter 12, the author says, therefore. Therefore. all that I've said before is now to make, to focus your attention on this very moment. And this is what he says. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin that clings so closely, and let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, who for the sake of the joy that was set before him endured the cross, disregarding its shame, and has taken his seat at the right hand of the throne of God. This writer paints an amazing picture. Try to imagine yourself in it. A picture of being in a stadium. Most of us have been in a stadium of some kind or another, but almost always for us, the involvement has been as sitting in the stands. But in this picture, you are on the field, and the image is of a track. And you are on the track. You are the runner. And in the stands is everyone who has gone before you. Every person that has chosen in some way to follow God, to believe and put their trust in him. And they're cheering. And they're cheering for you. Come on. And they're rooting. And even in there are the faces of these people that have shown up in chapter 11. These heroes of faith like David and Moses and all these other folks. And they're cheering. And they're so, they're trying to encourage you. They're rooting you on. Now, those of us who have participated in any kind of sports or have given ourselves to even running know that there's a point at which you don't want to run anymore. They call it the wall, right? You hit it. You're running along. You may be feeling, I'm feeling pretty good right now. And then all of a sudden, boom, you realize everything in you tells you, I want to stop now. And you have to press on. And what these folks are cheering is press on. I want to encourage you to keep running, keep trying, keep going. And you press on with faith and hope. You hope that you'll have enough in the tank. You hope that you can pull it out so that you can finish the race. But what all of us find out sooner or later is that we lose. All of us at one point or another in some physical competition or whatever have lost. We've lost a set in tennis or a race or a basketball game or something. We realize we didn't have enough in the tank. We realize that we can't always push through the wall. And we experience this in life too, don't we? Don't we experience that we work really hard at our jobs? We give ourselves really, really fully and we get laid off. Or the company we started fails. Maybe we work really hard to be good friends or good spouses, and the relationship gets wrecked or the marriage ends. We work really hard to be good parents, and yet our children struggle and experience pain, and we don't know what to do about it, and we can't seem to solve it ourselves. And to all of us who have experienced these things and so many other things like it, the author says, don't give up. Don't give up. Don't give up. Look at all these folks who have gone before you. Look at this cloud of witnesses. Look at the people. Read the stories and see what they went through. And take heart from that, that God was with them and that he was at work. I think God even wants us to experience that as a church this morning. That for many of us and who have been trying to follow Jesus, to look around and even as we've been in this church for a while and see the faces of people who have really tried and been following and remember the things that they have gone through and to be encouraged by that. But the author has one main thing to say. Even though it's great that there's this cloud of witnesses encouraging us, even though that they're yelling and cheering us, telling us don't give up, there is one thing that he says you've got to do. Just one. You have to keep your eyes on Jesus. Jesus is the focal point. Going back to the race image, it's as if you're racing and you're running hard and you're working hard, but then all of a sudden, you know, you get going and you look up and there's Jesus and he's running in front of you. Except he's Jesus, so he's not running forwards, he's running backwards, and he's not even breaking a sweat, and he's still twice as fast as you are, right? And he's like, come on, come on, you can do it, right? You know, and he's like, I got you, we're gonna finish, I'm with you. And he's running in front of you all the way around the track backwards. You've got to keep your focus on him. He says, come on, follow me. I'm going to make it. And because I'm going to make it, you're going to make it. Come on, trust me. The author implores us to keep our eyes on him. And he gives us three reasons, three things to hold on to in order to do that. He encourages us to look at what Jesus has done, what he's gone through, and where he is now. What he has done. The author tells us in that passage he's the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. Most heroes, if you'll notice, don't start out seeking to lose their life. I've never heard an interview of someone who said, yeah, since I was a little boy, I always thought I would want to die for someone else. You know, I've never heard that. But this is what makes Jesus so distinct from other heroes, is that actually he came fully intending to die, fully intending to take the load. This is critical to the story. This is where he is truly different. And what he wanted most, why he did it, was not because he was some weirdo who had a death wish. He wasn't someone who just really wanted to inflict pain on himself. He understood that the only way it was going to happen, the only way that he was going to get what he wanted, which was for us to experience and be connected to God, was for him to let the building fall on him. Was for him to be the one who got the people and landed the burning plane. To be the one who rescued people from the hijacked bus. Much like other heroes I mentioned earlier, all of Jesus' life prepared him for this moment. It was intentional and it was focused, and he came and did this so that we could be connected to God. Second thing is what he went through. He tells us, keep your eyes on this. What most heroes are what's interesting about most heroes is they're celebrated, right? You can read about what happened to Sully and all the great things that happened to him after he did this. But there are some, like Jesus, who are actually reviled and persecuted and thought of as losers. Part of the story coming up to Easter is that Jesus was coming in to do all this, and everybody said, this isn't who we want. You're not the hero we want. Persecuted him and he died. This isn't the way it goes. Heroes don't get publicly shamed and crucified. Heroes are lauded. They get to have parades, and then they get to go on Oprah, and then their life is whole. Right? I don't think I understood how important this was until this last week. This idea that somehow Jesus so clearly despised the shame that came along with being the hero that he was. About a week ago Friday, I was actually, at the age of 50, in my first fender bender, first accident where I was at fault. A week ago Friday, I hit, slammed into a car in front of me. Neither I nor the person were hurt, thank goodness. But my car, as you can see, was pretty banged up. This looks much better because I put the lights back in and kicked them into place. But at first they were hanging down on the side, and my car looked very sad. It was a very sad little car. But what I was not prepared for was the response of people as I drove around Palo Alto. Because I drove around, and I guess given the damage and where it was pretty obvious that I was at fault, right? I guess that if it's in the front, you slammed into someone else. So I would get to intersections, and even though I was the last one there, they would all say, no, no, you first. You go right ahead. I thought that was so weird. People made the oddest faces at me. Sometimes they looked pitiful, like, oh, you know, and other times they looked like disgust, like, God, can't you drive? And then sometimes there was just fear. I saw a bicyclist once that I came up to a stop, and he was about 40 feet away and he slammed on his brakes, you know, it's like, yeah, go right ahead, buddy, you know. I have never been so self-conscious about driving my car around in Palo Alto. I mean, it's not terrible, but it's significant damage. It's obviously visible. But it was as if I had a sign hung on my car that said, I am a bad driver. I hit people like you. You should avoid me. I am bad. That's what it felt like to drive this car. Now, maybe like me, you don't like to feel shame. You don't like to feel embarrassed and have people look at you with pity or derision. We'd much rather be seen as excellent drivers. Actually, we'd much rather be seen as excellent people, right? without a lot of dings and dents in our exterior. But what Jesus does and what he went through is modeled for us that even the things that we're ashamed of or that we struggle with, we do not have to hide them, but we can bring them out into the light. We do not need to be ashamed, but we can bring them to him. Because he despised the shame. He stood in the face of it and went through and was a hero. He does not ask us to bear it on our own, but to come to him and be relieved of that shame. Whatever it may be in our lives. And it says he did this for the joy set before him. What joy? What joy is in this picture? What joy is there in the picture of being despised? Tells us that it was the joy that Jesus had in one being reunited with his Father, but the joy that he had in knowing that what he was doing would be the reason that everyone who ever lived, past, present, and future, could be connected to God. That is what brought Jesus' heart joy. That God would be able to lavish his mercy and love on everyone that he has created. Whatever we have gone through, we can know that Jesus has gone through that first, and that he has not chosen to sideswipe it because he was God, but went through it. And he did it for joy, not out of obligation or duty or just sucking it up, but out of the joy of being in relationship with God. That is a hero in my book. Finally, where he is now. The author tells us we should keep our eyes on Jesus because of where he is now, seated at the right hand of God. This is big because the author wants us to see that death is not the end. Death was not the end for Jesus. He is with God now, chief among all those who are cheering for us in the stadium. He is cheering for us and inviting each one of us. Remember, running backwards in front of us, inviting us, wooing us. Come on, keep running. You can do this. I will help you. To put our trust, our hope, our confidence in him over and over and over again. I think we're all aware that there is a finish line in this life. We're pretty clear there's a hard stop at death. There comes a time when all of our bodies will cease to function fully and we will no more be as we are now. What distinguishes Jesus in my mind is that not only does he save your life now, save your life by bringing joy and purpose and meaning now, but he saves you again for life, for eternity, that death is not the final answer. There is no other hero I have ever heard of who makes that promise and who delivers and who wants to have that role in our lives. So what is it that you want in a hero? Perhaps it's someone with the attributes I listed earlier. I see all those and more in the person of Jesus. And that is why at the heart of the story, heart of the Christian story, is the person of Jesus. He is my hero. He's the hero of my story and of many who are here this morning. And he invites each of us to make him the hero of our story. The day someone can show me a hero like Jesus with more integrity, more passion, makes promises, and then backs them up through his own death and resurrection will be the day that I will follow him. But I don't think that's going to come. I think this is the hero that human history has waited for. And that is why we celebrate Easter at VCFP. Because the hero has come and has saved the day. Final note about this hero. I'm reading the Chronicles of Narnia with my children. Many of you may know of this. It's a classic Christian, it's actually just a classic kids story with very solid Christian overtones, written by a man of deep faith named C.S. Lewis. And we just finished the first book of the Chronicles of Narnia called The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And as we were reading it, and I was reading it to my two girls, we got to the part where the main characters are about to meet the hero of the story. His name is Aslan, and Aslan is a lion. And he's very clearly sort of a Christ or Jesus figure in the story. And one of the main characters is afraid to meet him because he sounds kind of scary. And so he asks one of the hosts that they're having dinner with, is he safe? And to that, one of the other characters replies, safe? Don't you hear what Mrs. Beaver tells you? Who said anything about safe? Of course he isn't safe, but he's good. Unlike most of the heroes we imagine or experience in the public today, people like Mr. Sullenberger, they come into our lives for a dramatic moment and then they are gone, often never to be seen again. Jesus, on the other hand, is the hero who comes to live with you, who comes to be in your life. And sometimes when he comes in, he will address and open up areas of your life that you're excited about. You're like, wow, I've always wanted to see that or know that. That's so great. And other times he will come in and point your attention at things that you weren't exactly excited to have him in. He's unpredictable. He is a hero, but he's not a hero of our own making. He has his own mind. He has his own intentions. But the one thing that we can always fall back on is that no matter what he brings up or what he looks into or what he says to us, the truth is that it will always be good. That's the kind of hero I want. That's why I celebrate Easter. Because there's somebody involved in my life who understands even better than me, shocking as that may seem, what is good for me. And certainly what is good for you. Better than I. That is why those of us here at the Vineyard choose to follow Jesus. And we acknowledge that it is no question that when you open your heart to anyone in a relationship, in any way, where you are asked to have faith in them, it is never safe. You can always be hurt. It is only true with God, and specifically the person of Jesus, that even when the results are unexpected or difficult or delayed, that you will always know that they are good. I think that being true makes life, in all its unexpected twists and turns, not only bearable, but exciting. And not just exciting, but worth living.